Yeah, I'm just trying to slide to turn the pages. Okay, good evening, ladies. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you for inviting me. The best part of speaking is always that it pushes me to learn myself and to really give it a lot of thought. So if nobody else benefits, I already did, so it was worth it. So thank you. This is also fun. It's a new crowd for me, new faces mostly. As Malka said, I am in Boca. We're in Boca now. This is our 12th year here. We came to teach in the school. The school needed teachers, so that's what we do. I've been teaching, makes me feel grown up to say, like 20 years now. Basically, you know, most all ages, officially either in elementary school, preschool, middle school, and then I've taught college and done, I do adult education on the side, cheer in the neighborhood, things like that. So anyway, tonight we're here to talk about marriage as a means to a better me. So we're going to try to crystallize a perspective on the halachos of marriage and the hashkafa of the marriage relationship in order to facilitate our growth, to help me become the best me that I could be. And if we think about it, what are the possible perspectives we could have on when we're talking about marriage and we're talking about the halachos of marriage, halachos nida, and the marriage relationship, the midos aspect of the marriage, right? So I could think of either we could see it as a burden, a nuisance in the way of me doing what I want to be doing, adding to the busyness, the pressures of life. B, we could have the perspective of not so much thought put into it. It's what I do. I'm firm, that's what I do. You know, kind of whatever. You know, I'll take it as it comes and this is how it is. Or we could have the perspective of seeing it as an opportunity, a challenge, something that I want to embrace, something very, very positive. So what difference does it really make what our perspective is on it? You know, how is it going to play out in the way we feel, and how is it going to play out in what we then go on to accomplish? So what's very clear, I think we all are aware of, is that whatever our perspective is, that determines the reality, the world that we live in. Right? So just a very concrete example of that is, let's say we're climbing a mountain, and I think of it as like fun, like this is fun to climb the mountain, like I'm going to have fun climbing that mountain. I think of it as fun, and that's how I feel and experience it. And I could be doing it with a friend who thinks of it as like a huge burden and the biggest nuisance in the world, and that's how she thinks of it, and that's how she experiences it. So to me, it's fun. To her, it's horrific. And we're doing the exact same thing. So does our perspective affect the way we feel and then the way we do things? You can think about it with anything. You know, there's the classic example of the half empty, half full. You know, and that's how it is to you. Cooking, you could see it enjoyable, and then it is, or you could see it as, you know, a chore, a burdensome chore, and that's how it is. So let's just clarify, think through a couple of very, very important basic ideas. And one is what we already said, is that the way I see and think about things leads to the way I feel about things. Right? Feelings are not automatic. First comes the way I think about something, the way I see and understand something, and that will determine the way I feel about it. And in talking about marriage, the way we think about it is the way we, let's say, the halachos of marriage, the way we think about it is the way we will feel about it, and that will have a strong impact into the third area, is the way we play it out. You know, if we're optimistic, positive, see it as an opportunity, we'll likely approach it with a lot more energy and positivity and do it much better than if our perspective is a negative one, a burdensome one. When the going gets rough, chances are we won't have that drive to push through. Another very important thing to know, because we said the way you think is the way you feel, will be translated to the way you act, is that we can decide the way we think about it. We can control our thoughts. So whatever attitude we had up until this point, and hopefully it was positive and optimistic, but even if it was, we're here to be mechazeh, we can make it even more positive, more optimistic, and control the way we feel. So we control what we're thinking about. So really the first step is knowledge, and then we can, and then to work on, to control the way we think, because you also may be in the habit of negative thinking. So we have to know what we want to think, and then try to work on thinking that, and then what did we say that leads to? The way I think contributes to the way I, or determines the way I feel about it, and then we'll follow, the next step was what I will do about it. So, let's think about together what is our perspective? Like, let's just stop and reflect for a minute. What is our perspective? What is our attitude, our hashkafa, the way we look at, the way we see about our mission, about what we're here to accomplish, about our mitzvos, and about our midos work? What is it? So we could either, you know, zoom in on a specific area, like let's talk Hilchos Nida, or we can think of the bigger picture first and then fit that into the framework, which is usually the way I like to go about things, is to zoom out, look at the bigger picture, and then fill it in. You have a 1,000-piece puzzle. What are you going to do first?
The border.
You're going to give it a frame, and then things make sense to fit into the frame. Yeah? Right? So you have to have a general understanding. It's kind of like if you want to build a skyscraper, what are you going to do first? A solid, smooth foundation. And if it's solid and smooth, you can build and build and build and build, and it will not topple. As opposed to, let me get a little bit of understanding about this, let me get a little bit of understanding about that, you know, let me take a puzzle piece from here and a puzzle piece from there, and hope that it comes together in a nice big puzzle. Right? We know that it's much more effective to have the framework and to fill it in. So we're here to talk about our hashkafa on Hilchos, the halachos of marriage, right? Taras mishpacha, Hilchos Nida, and also on the other aspect of marriage, the midos aspect of it. So let's just zoom out for a minute and think about what is our perspective, our understanding on mitzvos and midos in general. So what is the goal? What is the purpose? What is it all about? Why are we doing it? We're here, there's like a sefer with like a million trillion halachos, like what is it all about? Why do we have it? You're very quiet compared to my students, you know? So one thing, you know, if it was a classroom where everybody was comfortable sharing, you know, what would we say like our goal and our purpose was? You would say to?
Guide us.
The Torah guides us. Guides us in how we should?
Live.
Live, serve Hashem. Okay, so we have to definitely have a clear goal. There has to be a clear goal. Like if I put in Waze, you know, in Boca, you know, 45 minutes away without traffic, you know, NMB, somewhere in NMB, where would I be right now?
Not here.
I would not have gotten here if I put in a vague goal. Agreed? Yeah? Would I have showed it up here? You put in a vague goal, you're not going to get there. Okay? So, we know that we have to have super clear where we are headed, what our goal is, what we are trying to accomplish. You know, so let's think about it. What is it, you know, we're all living, we're grown-ups now, you know, and we see how fast time ticks by, you know, and we have to think about what is it that we want in life? What are we here to do? We're here to become the greatest me that I can be, correct? But what happens, you know, we get distracted. Hashem put us in the olam, ne'olam, it's hidden. We get distracted by physicality, by olam hazeh, pursuing materialism, all sorts of other things, honor, money, whatever you want to call it, right? But it's very, very helpful. You know, I'll give you a little, like, sounds interesting. But if we stop and think for a minute, imagine, and I've heard other people use this analogy also. Imagine, because it's going to happen. It happens to everybody. And the more we're in touch with that it's going to happen, the better off we're going to be. We're all going to die. Right? We're all going to die. You say it every day in Elkai Nisham. It's very, very helpful to think about it, right? And you're going to take the Nisham from me. It's going to be over. I'm going to pass from this world. Yes, it's going to happen. And it's going to be my funeral, right? And I'm going to be lying there, and they're going to be talking about me. And they're going to be talking about me by the Shiva. And what is it that I am hoping that I want that they will be saying about me? Did you ever think about that? Anybody ever think about that?
Yeah.
I remember my Shavu Brachos, they were saying like all these nice things about us, and I said to my husband, I was like, you know, like listen, don't be like, ah. I was like, listen, because like the next time you're going to hear things like this is going to be by your funeral, you know, like people don't do this to you every day, like sit and sing your praises, you know. But what is it that we would want them to say? Like, do we want them to say, this, she was a, you know, a tzaddikah, she was a real Eved Hashem, like nothing could shake her emunah, like she was like the real deal, she stuck to her values no matter what. Yeah, anybody here want them to say that about you? Anybody want to join me on that? Yeah. Okay, great. Would you want them to say about your mitzvos? She, what, and people who really know you, really know you. Those are the only people who said shiva for you, the people who really know you, right? She was the most loving, giving, selfless, warm person that I ever met. Yeah? Right? Yeah? Okay, so that it's a good thing to think about. What do we want to accomplish? Well, and we know, like, open, what's the classic, Masir Sefer, the Masir Sharm. How does this start? Perek Aleph, right? I have it on the wall in my living room. Yisod HaChasidus, v'shor Rishavot Atzmimahu, right? What is the foundation of Tzidkus, right? And the root of pure Avot HaShem is what? Sheyisparer Yisameitz Eitzal Adam, that it is super clear to you, Machov Esob Olamo, what you're here to accomplish. Do you want to be the greatest person you can be? Right? Are we in that we want to be the greatest me I want to be? Yeah? We want them by our Levi to say she was the greatest, like, Eved Hashem in the Nekeva form that I ever met. She was like, right, she lived for Olam Haba. She lived for Hashem. Right? Midos, like, yeah. So we know that that's what we want. So we have a goal. Good. And we are very, 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 very lucky people. Because what every single human being that whoever lived and ever lives right now and ever will want to live wants is, more than anything, is to, what would you guess? Everybody wants? What would you say? Is it what?
Happiness.
Okay, everyone wants happiness. That's a great answer. And what gives a person happiness? Everybody wants happiness. Every single person in the world wants to be happy. And what gives a person happiness? What is the key to happiness? There are a lot of right answers.
Satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. No, feeling good about myself. Knowing that I have value and knowing that I have a purpose. Do you think a person can have a pumped, positive, happy life if they don't think that they have a purpose? Like that it wouldn't really matter if they were here or not? No. So people, everyone is seeking a purpose. Somebody might find their purpose in saving whales. Somebody might find, you know, and dedicate their life to that. But everybody is dying to feel good about themselves, feel that they value, and know that they have a mission. So we are so fortunate enough because we do not have to spend our whole life trying to figure out what our mission is. You know why? Because it was shared with us explicitly by the creator of this whole little universe that we live in, right? The one who created it, right? And put us in it for a reason, shared with us the reason that we are here. Yeah? You know what I'm talking about? That's what happened during Shovavim, or the Parashios of Shmos Fa'era Bo Bashach Yisra Mishpatim, Go Yidios Kolikos, right? These parashios are the foundation of our emuna. They tell us the three bomber questions that if you, what's your name?
Me?
Yeah. What's your name? All right, as fast as they could answer what's their name, If you are a Jew and you are alive in this world, you should know in the forefront of your minds, as forefront as your name is, and like, this is these three questions like this. Who is Hashem? Why do you make the world? And what is my purpose in the world? And that is the foundation that we talked about. And that is the frame that we talked about. And Helchos Nida and Midos work, this relationship, that relationship, every single mitzvah fits into that frame. We have to have that frame. So we need to zoom out and we need to get the understanding of those answers with what I call crystal clear clarity. Do you have it crystal clear, your understanding of who is Hashem, why do you make the world, and what is my purpose in the world? And then the rest, all you have to do is keep the shutters open, right? You have to have crystal clear clarity, and then you just have to keep reminding yourself of it. Do you understand? Right? So I know who Hashem is. First time I'm in, who is Hashem? Hashem is the Borei Umanig, the creator and controller, right? That is who Hashem is. Hashem is the creator and controller. And why did he make the world? Very simple. He made the world to give. Because Hashem is good, and good gives. Okay? This is not where the world that he's giving is. This is the world where we can earn that good in Om Haba, right? And why did he create us? So that he could give to us. And what is our mission? What is our purpose? So he told us that, like I said, in these parashios. So what happens in these parashios? Right? So Shemos is the initiation of the process, right? The Korah Barizel, where we were slaves in Mitzrayim, right? And then, what did Hashem do? A one time in history phenomenon. What did he do? Ve'ira. He created the world, and then, like a puppeteer, went under the puppet theater, thanks for having this, right? And controlled the world, without anybody seeing him. Correct? Yeah? And Adam and Chava knew him very clearly, knew Hashem very clearly. Yeah. But not so much later than that, what happened? People started saying, having all these apikorsis kind of doubts. Is there really a creator? Maybe he created the world and then is not so interested in it. Is there really responsibility on the part of mankind? Does Hashem really give punishments and rewards? Is he really interested? Right? Does he really control everything? So all these questions that people started having a few generations after Hashem created the world, when Hashem was in hiding, right? Creating everything behind the scenes, not showing them. Parshas Vayera, Hashem said, "Hi guys, I'm the puppeteer. I'm the one controlling the puppet show." Right? So let's say you were all 4-year-olds. And remember the classic puppet shows, like the Purim puppet show, right? Right? Yeah? So even if, like, initially, like, the puppeteer said, "Hi, everybody, I'm about to start the puppet show," but and then we went down, and then the kids totally forget because it's, like, going on, and they're just watching the puppets. They totally forget that there's someone down here, right? And then in the middle of the show, he's like, "Hi," and they're like, "Oh, where'd you come from?" Right? And he's like, no, look, I'm the one controlling the puppets. See, I'm the one controlling the puppets? Yeah? And they're like, "Oh, see, I'm going to make this one look like this, and this one look like this." Right? So they really get it. Everybody sees clearly the puppeteer controls the puppet show. And then he said, "Now guys, I'm going to go back, but what will you know from now till the end of the show? That's who controlling the puppets? The puppeteer." That was the Mitzrayim experience. Though that was the Makos, the Kriyas Yamsuf, was Hashem saying to the world, "Oh, you forgot I'm here? Hi, everybody. It's me. The world is not just functioning on its own. Look, you want to see that I'm controlling nature? Look what I'm going to do. I'm going to take the water, turn it into blood. I'm going to tell you I'm going to do it, right? I'm going to make frogs do this, and all of a sudden I'm going to make this do that." Hashem manipulated and tinkered with nature in such an obvious and clear way that what did the Jews, the Mitzrayim, the whole world see clearly? That, oh, there's a creator who controls everything, down to the smallest molecule. Like, this molecule is going to be water and this molecule is going to be blood, right? And so that took away the apikarsis idea that there isn't a creator, he doesn't really control everything. There is responsibility on the part of mankind, because remember how all the machas were like, mida keneged mida, right? You did this, you got that. So that showed that Hashem does give schar and onesh. There is consequence for your actions. It's very specific, right? And it also showed his tremendous love to the Jewish people before the eyes of the entire world. So what is the boom message of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Makos and the Kriyas Yam Suf, is that Hashem controls everything. Everything. And loves the Jewish people. And there's reward and punishment. So there's responsibility on the part of mankind, right? And then what did the puppeteer do after he introduced himself? Remember? The mashal? What did he do? He went out. But then what did the kids know for the rest of the show? That he's continuing. So what I'm telling you is actually the Ramban at the end of Parsha's Bo. Right? Because the first seven makos are in Va'ira, the last three are in Bo. And then at the end of Parsha's Bo, Hashem tells us, V'yigigadza telavincha, tell this over to your children. Wear this message of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Wear it opposite your heart, right? On your arms, between your eyes, in the tefillin. Put it on the mezuzos b'secha. Eat the Karban Pesach every year at this time. Don't eat chametz. And if you mess up any of this punishment, it is kares. Right? Because it's so important. It's so, so, so important. And why is this so, so, so important? Because it will keep in your hearts and in your minds forever that Hashem introduced himself, revealed to the world that he controls everything. But the second big part of Tis Mitzrayim is that Hashem controls everything. And the second part is Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. And what did we attain then?
We became
B'nai Yisrael. We got our identity. Right? We got our identity. So every single day when we say Vayomer, and if you're in an art school, it helps. Maybe other ones also do, because it tells you. Remember to think that you're being Yotzi the Mitzvah of Zechet Yisrael Mitzrayim, next to this part. When you say, at the end of Vayomer, Anuch Hashem Alkech Asher Tzitzichem Eretz Mitzrayim Giyos Lechem Elokim, think, yes, this is how I know for certain that Hashem controls everything, because this was the big bomber example to the whole world, and they'll know that forever and ever, even after it's over, right? That Hashem controls everything, and this is when we got our identity as Ovdei Hashem, right? As Ovdei Hashem. And what does that mean? People who serve Hashem and connect to Hashem. And then where did we go straight from there? Okay, you have your identity, you're servants of Hashem, and then what? Figure out on your own how to do it? Remember we said, we're so lucky. We don't need to search our whole lives for our mission. Hashem said, you have your identity? Come, let me spell out for you your mission. We went straight from Yetzias Mitzrayim to Matan Torah. And what did Hashem say in Matan Torah? He gave us the framework. He answered those three bomber questions. Who am I? Right? Why did I make the world? Who are you? What mission am I giving you? What's the first one? First of the Esther Sedibros. Now we're talking about Parshas Yisro. The mitzvah of emuna. I don't like to use the word belief because in the vernacular, when people say belief, they talk often about things that are not necessarily reality. Right? Do you believe in ghosts? Do you believe in miracles? It does translate as belief. But when we talk about emuna, we mean knowing Hashem. Right? So how does Hashem introduce himself in the mitzvah of emuna? Does he? You would think if I introduced myself to you, what would I not say? I wouldn't say, hi, my name is Gita Gutman, and I don't know, I'm one of eight kids. Why? Because it's such a small detail, right? You would say a stronger identifying factor, yeah? Yeah, maybe people would say, like, their job, or, you know, I don't know, what? So what does Hashem say when he says, I, and who does he say this to? Literally talking, speaking, we know this, it was the divine revelation to the entire nation, again, a once in history of humanity experience phenomenon. He says, I am Hashem, you're Hashem. But what would be the biggest thing? He is a Bore Umane. He's a creator and controller. So you would think he would say, I am Hashem, the creator of everything. But does he? No, he says, I am Hashem who took you out of Mitzrayim. So he's not saying the creator, he's saying, I am Hashem who is the controller. I keep going like this, I forget. Like, I'm used to my students who know me, like, I say, Beau Riemannic is the CNC, the creator and the controller, yeah? So, because we didn't experience the creation, but did we experience where Hashem revealed that he is the controller of everything? Yes. Yeah, I am Hashem, you know, like, I'm the one that you met like 5 minutes ago. I'm Hashem, who you just met, who you experienced firsthand, who controls everything. And then, Asher Hosi Sicha Meir Tintayim, who took you out of under the controls of foreign forces, for what purpose? To give you your identity, Lios Lachem Lelokim, to be your God, for you to be my servants. So now you know who I am, I'm telling you straight, you know who you are, you know your identity, and here is your mission. And then Hashem spells out what our job is. Okay? So that is our perspective. And why does he give us such details? Because he created us, like we said, to give to us. So does he want us to do a really great job? Yes. So Hashem gives us tells us exactly what we should do to become the greatest people we can be. So basically we have, if we're lucky, how many years here in Olam Hazeh? Like 120, right? So that seems like a long time. Who feels like they're really far from that? Like me, right? Like really far from that. But if you think about eternity, 120 is like not even visible on the line, right? It's so short, right? And if our eternity is determined by what we do right here, right now, in this tiny, short, little life that we have, right? Do we want to maximize every moment? Yes. Yeah? So what would happen if Hashem gave us like a few mitzvos and like minor midos to work on? What do we know from Pirkei Avos, or from we say before Pirkei Avos? Hashem, out of his love and his infinite kindness, Ratzak HaKadosh Baruch Hu le Zakos es Yisrael. Lefichach hirbah lehem. So if you have such a little time to accomplish such an important mission, which is going to determine your forever and ever and ever and ever eternity, right? So Hashem, out of his great love and kindness, basically gives us an opportunity to earn our eternity every single minute of our lives. Do you know what I'm talking about? Basically every minute of our lives, there is a mitzvah that we can be viewing as an opportunity and jumping for it. Or there's a midah challenge. The Vilna Gaon says, like, what is the goal of life? The goal of life is to refine your midos. There's a midah challenge, opportunity every moment. So now, as we started, we could have different perspectives on the halachos of marriage, the midos challenge of marriage, right? But if we realize that this is just one area of mitzvos. It's one area of mitzvos, right? And what are mitzvos and what are midos? They are opportunities. So I'll quote my daughter who quoted Rebbe Sinyachnis from her class. They're not in my way. They are my way of becoming the best me that I can be. Now, does that sound so obvious? Like, yeah, of course, opportunities, yeah, right? We all learned when we were little, like the mushel, you have a backpack, you go to the island, you collect the diamonds, right? Right? It's like, why not? But then you get distracted, right? But think of it practically. Who here would like to be the kindest, most patient mother or person, wife, neighbor, teacher, co-worker, whatever it is. The most patient person ever. Who would like to be the most patient person? Okay, if you don't have your hands up, let's talk. Everybody wants to be patient, right? So I really want to be patient. So you know what Hashem is going to do? He's going to give me chance after chance after chance after chance to work on my patience. But you know what happens? Hashem gives me a challenge, and it's called amnesia. I forget. What? 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 You know what amnesia is? Like when you're forgetting every second? Right? Chas v'shalom, which never happens to anybody? Okay? I really want to work on my patience. And then my 5-year-old Sarah comes in and, like, you know, thinks it's cute to, like, pour sand all over the floor. And I'm like, what would you think would be a normal human reaction? Yes! No? No? But that's an opportunity to work on my patience. But it depends on my perspective. If I view it like, I want to work on my patience. I want to become the best person I can be, right? I want to be most like Hashem. The point of working on your mitzvos is to connect to Hashem. You can only connect to Hashem if you can relate to Hashem. If your mitzvos are like Hashem, what is Hashem? Giving, kind, compassionate, forgiving. Right? So if you want to connect to Hashem, you have to, the more you're like Hashem, the more you can connect to Hashem. Do you connect to people that you have like nothing in common with? Yeah, you're like talking to them, you're like, we must be on different planets, or we'll have totally different glasses. You can't. The more you like people, the more you connect to people. Okay? So the more we like Hashem, the more we connect to Hashem. Correct? So that, I think that makes it like very real. And I could, and it's work. It's work. But first we have to start with the knowledge, the understanding, the goal. Okay? So what should be our perspective on mitzvos? What should be our perspective on mitzvos challenges? They are part of Hashem's detailed program for me. And He made a program where I could every minute be working and accomplishing and developing myself and coming closer to Him so I have Olam Haba with Sari Minu. Right? And if we don't have that clarity and then keep our eyes open, right? Fight the amnesia, right? Right? If we don't, then you know what's going to happen? It's like either not thinking, and you might think that's not so bad, but let me tell you, I came across a quote recently from Rabbi Avigdor Miller. Not sure where I put it, but he says here, okay, let's see. I don't want to waste any time, but he says that if a person keeps all the mitzvos, even a firm person, but he does it without any thought, he will not be successful in recognizing his creator, the purpose of it all. Okay? So that was our second perspective. Our second perspective on marriage and on our the halacha part and the mitzvos part is, I could be kind of neutral. Yeah, well, if you're kind of neutral, you're not really going to be accomplishing so much. Is it a lot better than not doing the mitzvos? Yeah, but you're not going to be accomplishing so much. Right? So we definitely want that third perspective. But I was in the middle of a different thought. Bring me back. We were saying that we want to keep that clarity to view things as opportunities. Okay, let me see where we're holding for time. We need definitely... Oh, no. Oh, no, it's good. It's going. Okay, fantastic. Any questions so far? No? Okay, we get to talk more. Fantastic. Okay. If we go back to that Ramban at the end of Parsha Bo, he explains the purpose of the mitzvos. And he quotes the Mishnah in Avos that we're familiar with. And he says, Havei zahir b'mitzvah kala kivachamura. And he continues with Shekulan chamudos v'chavivos me'od. So be very careful with like what would seem like a light minor mitzvah. Just like a big bomber one. Like we would not eat a cheeseburger. But be very careful with like your bedika, right? Or asking your shayla or whatever it is. Because they're all so special and precious. Do you know why? Because they all accomplish the same thing. Okay? And we're talking about, we want to have this perspective on mitzvot that they're opportunities. What does every mitzvah accomplish? Well, we said, if we don't do it too much thought, it's very limited what it accomplishes. But if we do a mitzvah, so you have to have, I explain it like this, there are three parts of a mitzvah. There's the action, the thoughts, and the feelings. Or it could be thought of as there's the guf and the neshama of a mitzvah. The guf means the action, and the neshama is like the thoughts and the feelings, right? So if we talk about the basic thoughts, the most basic kavana that works for every single mitzvah, okay? I am doing a bedika if we're talking about Hilchos Nida. I am shaking a lulav. I am sitting in a sukkah. I am lighting my Shabbos candles. I am washing my hands. Like, what is the most basic, generic kavana that we could have? To think, instead of not thinking and being on like autopilot, to think, I am doing a mitzvah of Hashem. Right? And so we are acknowledging I am doing a mitzvah of Hashem, even if I'm not thinking in the lulav is the you know, every represents every part of my body and all of me, I want to serve Hashem. If it just first basic kavanah in every mitzvah, share to the Shana mitzvahs, it's funny, you made us totally special with your mitzvahs and you commanded us, right? I am doing a mitzvah. Well, why would you do a mitzvah? What is a mitzvah? Right? A mitzvah is something that Hashem commanded me to do. So what are we doing by doing a mitzvah? If we think about it, we are remembering, acknowledging there is Hashem. There is Hashem here. And it matters if I do it. And if he sees if I do it. And I'm showing my commitment. And if it's hard for me, I'm really showing my dedication and my commitment. How do you build, can you build a relationship with Hashem if you're not aware of Hashem? No. Now, is it obvious that Hashem is right here? Like right now, we're talking about it, right? Okay, we're talking about it right now. So is it obvious that Hashem is here? Yeah, we're talking about it, right? But what's going to happen when we walk out the door? Amnesia. Amnesia. What was I getting? Where do I need to go? Where do I need to shop? Right? Well, we have to keep the constant awareness. Do you think we'd be able to keep the constant awareness of Hashem if we didn't have 613 plus the millions of details mitzvos? So Baruch Hashem, we have a million details of Taras Mishpacha. Because then every time I'm doing a bedika, right? Why am I doing this? And we don't want to go there if not thinking. Because if we're not thinking, we're like stone, right? And we're not really going to develop a relationship if we're not thinking. Now, okay, it's avoda. We have to work on it. We have to train ourselves to think, right? So every time we do a bedika, every time we do any mitzvah, every time we're careful the way we cut our pepper on Shabbos, you know? What are we doing? We're acknowledging that Hashem is here. I could have a relationship with Hashem if he's right here. And I'm here to serve him. And what if it's inconvenient and hard or uncomfortable? Well, what if you're in any relationship? If it's so easy to do something for you, how much does it mean to you?
Not much.
Not much, right? Someone's so rich and they give you $100. Okay. But what if when you do something for someone, it takes a lot out of you? You really wanted to go to sleep, but there's someone in your family, whether it be your spouse or your child or a friend or someone or a mother or mother-in-law, who really needs your time. And you were really, like, really wanting to go to sleep. But you put their needs in front of your needs. You exercise your selfless instead of selfish muscle, right? You really gave. You gave of yourself. What is going to happen to the relationship? Contrast it to, oh, you need $100? Okay, I have like 1,000 in my wallet here. What's going to happen? What's the difference? Right? The more it takes out of me, the harder it is for me to do for you. The more I give for myself for you. We all know, ahava comes from have, to give. How do you love someone? Because loving is giving, right? Love comes from giving. And the more myself I give, the closer I feel. So if I have mitzvos all the time, then I can think. And we're going to train ourselves to think. I'm doing mitzvah. Why? Because there's Hashem. Oh, and I'm an Eved Hashem. Right? And he's here. So I'm strengthening my awareness of Hashem's presence. Okay? I'm building my emunah, my yiras Hashem. And if it's hard for me, to do the mitzvah or that midos challenge, then that's even better. Bring on the hard. Because the harder it is, the more I'm giving of myself. So do we want hard or do we want easy? We want hard. I invite you to adopt the mantra, the following mantra. Hard is good. Yeah. Hard is good. Right? If you were working with a personal trainer, right? And she told you to do these type of wall sits, these squats, whatever, and you're like, oh, whatever her name is, Dina, this is really hard. Is she going to be like, oh, I'm so sorry, sweetheart. Here, stand up. Or is she going to be like, good, because that's exactly going to work that muscle. Yeah? Yeah? Because hard is good if you're trying to grow and accomplish. Hard is good in a relationship if you want to build that relationship. Is marriage supposed to be easy? No. Right? The best thing you can, you know, think of going into a marriage or going into any situation is expect hard. And hard is good. Because nothing good comes easy. Nothing, light doesn't build. I could lift this all day, and guess what? My biceps are not going to, nothing's going to happen to them. Right? Right? Nothing's going to happen if it's easy. If it does, oh, I saw a quote somewhere that was very good. If it doesn't challenge you, it doesn't build you. So we want lots of opportunities to do mitzvos. Because mitzvos makes me remember, there's a Hashem here. And I can't have a relationship with Hashem if I forget that he's here. If I'm living in the state of amnesia, it's not really amnesia, then it's like total forgetfulness, right? Right? So I want a lot of mitzvos so I can constantly remember Hashem. And I want challenges. I want hard. Because then I have an opportunity to sacrifice. And ladies, we're all girls. What do we want to do? What does Hashem want from us? Right? What does Hashem want from everybody? What's the quote in Svarim? Some of the teachers help me out here, right? You know, what, right? To love him and to serve him. And every single morning we already spoke about what you're going to think about in Vayomer. But now when you say Vahafta, thank you to Art School, it helps us, it puts it right there. When you say the Ahafta Es Hashem Elokecha, V'chol Vavcha V'chol Nafshecha, you're supposed to think, I accept upon myself today, Hayom, right? To, as if it was commanded today, to love Hashem with all my heart and all my soul. I'm ready to give my life and V'chol Modecha and everything I've got, right? So we're saying, like, yeah, accept that upon myself. And then we accept in V'haya to do the mitzvos. How? In a mediocre way? Is it okay for us to serve Hashem in a mediocre way? I don't know, but I do know because it actually says that in Devarim, Hashem says, what's going to happen? All the klolos are going to happen to you, and they will happen already, right? To the Jewish people. Tachas eshelovat is that, what is the exact words? That because you didn't serve Hashem, b'simcha, with simcha. So is it okay just to, whatever, I'm from, this is what I do the mitzvos, you know? Like if I want to be married to a from guy, I have to do it, right? Is it okay to do it in a neutral, mediocre way? Not really, because we're supposed to serve Hashem with all our hearts and all our souls, and love Hashem with all our hearts and all our souls. So if we don't put thought, there's no thought, there'll be no feeling, there'll be no passion, right? Correct? Okay, and then the midos opportunity as well, right? If, you know, I just heard Rabbi Shai Cohen on a shiur on marriage say, like, a young man said to him, like, I know, I don't really want a marriage I have to work on. He's like, so don't get married, right? And I heard my father say, Rabbi Goldman, he said, like, marriage is the ultimate midos workout. It's supposed to be. The people closest in your life give, not annoy you the most. It depends on your perspective. You can think of it as annoy you the most, or you can think of it as they're the ones who give me the most opportunities to work on my midos. What is marriage all about? Right? And I heard Rabbi Shekhon say too, it's all about v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. Okay, so that should be our perspective. The mitzvos are opportunities. The midos workouts are opportunities. Right? Think of that example. I think it really makes it very clear. I want to be so patient, so Hashem is going to give me opportunities to work on my patience. And instead of saying, I wish you wouldn't do that. I wish he would change. I wish he would change that. I wish that wouldn't be. It's like, no. It's like going to the gym, right? Or, you know, whatever, having a personal trainer in your house. However you do it, or don't do it, whatever it is. Imagine someone goes to the gym, right? And the doctor sends them to the gym. You need to strengthen all your muscles, right? And the trainer says, this, it puts a weight on. And you're like, No. This is the weight that's going to help you. Right? We say every day, Shasali Kold Sarki. You give me everything I need down to my shoes, but on a deeper level. Every single thing that's in my life is exactly what I need to become the greatest me that I wanna be. Whether if I have vision or if I don't have vision. Whether if I have money or don't have money, I have this or don't have that. Whatever Hashem gives me, every single detail in my life is exactly what I need to become the best man I can be. it's not automatic, because if Hashem made things automatic, there would be no bechira, and then there would be no earning olam haba, right? It's not automatic. You know, if Hashem gives us a challenge, it's not like, challenges bring you closer to Hashem. No, no, no. They are, could go either way. Everything could go either way. It's a balance, right? It's a test. Okay, so with that, we're good. Any questions, please? Any questions on that? No? Maybe I was so clear. I don't know. Okay.
I have one.
Fantastic.
So you say that basically we should try to not have a mediocre attitude towards the mitzvahs, but does Hashem really expect us to have enthusiasm for all of them all the time? Like, put the kids to sleep, do the bedikas, make sure there's no bugs in your lettuce. Like, there's 3,000 things you have to do, including take care of your children and your husband. So how would you suggest that we maintain the desire to have the enthusiasm for this?
How to maintain the desire. Okay, so I just said today, we were going over with my students, how does one actually work on a mitzvah? Step number one is you have to really want to. Okay? If you don't really want something, you're not going to do it. Are you going to go through medical school and graduate medical school if you don't really want to? No. Are you going to overcome your anger? Are you going to constantly have awareness of Hashem if you don't really want to? No, no. You've got to really want to. But what if you don't really want to? Like, what if, I know I really should want to, like, you know, like, really have appreciation of Shabbos and, like, really, like, connect to Hashem on Shabbos. But I know I should really want to, but I don't really, you know? So then you have to back up a little bit and you have to understand the importance of it. Okay? And I suggest that if you want to understand the importance of something, see it yourself from the source. Yeah? Right? If you hear me say a mitzvah, you hear your husband tells it to you, it's not the same as if you opened the sefer, you know, and saw it yourself. You hear that? Like, see, the chumash is the words of Hashem. Like, think about it that way, because that's the way it is. You know, you could either just be aware of it or not aware of it. But, like, the Torah, the chumash, is the words of Hashem to me. Right? And Hashem's speaking to me. And he's saying, da-da-da-da-da, this mitzvah. So if you're not feeling the importance that or really wanting to do something, see it for yourself. Like, if you're feeling like you're getting a little sluggish in your taras mishpacha. So this is what you should do. And even if you're not feeling sluggish, but if you want more oomph, right? Just look at the source from yourself. See it firsthand, okay? So now I see it, I know it, so then I could really want it, right? And then once you really want something, okay, you want to be in the Olympics. You can want it from here to China. Guess what? You're not going to do it if you don't have a plan. Like we said, you have to have a goal. You have to have a goal. You have to have a plan. So you have to have a long-term goal, like you suggested, that we serve Hashem and do all the mitzvahs with all our hearts and all our souls. That's my goal. And then you have to have shorter goals along the way, smaller goals along the way. Okay, so I'm going to, like, we are all familiar with this concept. Like, pick certain things that you're zooming in and focusing on. Yeah? Does it sound like a familiar concept, right? Like, pick certain things that you're zooming in and focusing on. And if you think, like, oh my gosh, I'm going to zoom in and just focus on that area of mitzvahs or that mitzvah, like, what about the other bajillion ones? So first of all, once you're working on your avodas Hashem on a certain mitzvah or a certain mitzvah, you know, maybe pick one of each, then your mindset already is like, it's like you're wearing, like, feelers of, like, mitzvahs and mitzvahs. Like, even if I'm not working on that mitzvah, like, you're just, it's more on your mind. Right? So I'm really working on my patience, but then, like, my laziness versus my zuriness will come along with it because I'm, like, in the mindset of working on my mitzvahs. Yeah? And so then, yes, step by step by step by step. Yeah? Okay. Fantastic. Okay, another very important thing to remember and to think about is that the mitzvahs are not for Hashem. Right? The mitzvahs are not for Hashem. They're for me, for my benefit. It's not like, oh, I'm going to do this for you. Like, no, I'm doing this for This is for me. This is Hashem's program to help me. Okay, so let's zip through, and that's literally what we're going to do. Zip through, and really, everybody should read through a pamphlet in Rabbi Binyamin Fort Sefer, the Woman's Guide to Laws and Nida. So he has in here chapter 23 that summarizes all the previous chapters from 3 to 22, which he suggests, if you're learning, if a Kala is learning, like, give her like the basics and then go back and look at all the unusual situations, right? So you're not like just totally overwhelmed. And then he also recommends reviewing this on a regular basis. And once you're like familiar with the general halachos, then if an unusual situation comes up, you'll look it up. And something super, super, super important to mechazik ourselves in is the role of our Rav. Okay? For some reason, it's like harder to see it when it comes to ruchiness than when it comes to other things. You know, if somebody has a medical question, like most of us don't pretend to be experts and know what it is and guess it on our own. Right? Is that true? Right? Like most people know, like, I have no clue about that, so I'm going to ask. You know, like, do we all think that we're experts in astrophysics? No. No. So, like, we're not going to pretend that we know the answers. We might say, oh, I think that, but we know we don't know. So there's... This is an area of expertise that a Rav has expertise in. And so any questions, you know, and he says this like throughout his book, anything you're not certain of, ask. So hopefully we have somebody that we're comfortable asking or that we're comfortable sending our husbands to ask, right? What would prevent us from asking? Sometimes women will say, whatever, I'm not sure on this tzaddik, I'll just wait till tomorrow. That's not proper, at all not proper, because that's not what Hashem wants, right? We know that David Melch spent all day, his hands were in dam, and it tells us the dam nida, like he was passing shilas. Why? With the goal of trying to be matir women to their husbands. So we're not looking to be machmir on this. It's not, if you think it's sitkus to be more machmir, you're wrong. Right? What is the right thing to do in every situation? In every situation, every moment of life, what is the right thing to do? What Hashem wants us to do. Yeah? Make sense? Simple? The right thing to do is what Hashem wants us to do. If Hashem doesn't want you to be machmir and you're being machmir, are you being right or wrong? Wrong. Right? That's wrong. So sometimes, you know, I don't know if it's out of laziness or out of trying to be, a tzaddikus for something. Somebody might say, I'm not going to ask. I'll just wait another day. It's fine. But that's the wrong thing to do, okay? Because that's not what Hashem wants us to do. Sometimes people don't want to ask because of embarrassment. So we got to get over that, right? Like, would you not go to an OBGYN because of embarrassment? Who here likes to go to OBGYN? This time I'm not raising my hands, okay? But you're not going to not go out of embarrassment, right? You got it. Sometimes... things you have to get over. And I'm standing in front of Hashem after 120 years, and he's like, Gita, why didn't you do that? Well, it was so awkward. I'm like, awkward is not an excuse, okay? It was so hard to go to the mikvah Friday night. It was so hard. Yes! What, do you think Hashem didn't work out that I'm supposed to go to the mikvah Friday night? When it turns out on Friday night, which is more inconvenient often for people, much harder for people, you think Hashem didn't plan that? Remember, we want to build a relationship with Hashem, so he's going to give us opportunities for us to do self-sacrifice for Hashem, for what he tells us to do. He's like, I know, I loved you. That's why I gave you an opportunity to show your avas Hashem, to sacrifice. Heart is good, yeah. You know, heart is good, right? So, super important to remember that, to... We got to ask. If we're uncomfortable and if we're lucky enough that we could send a husband, wonderful. We got to ask. Like, would you ever, like, tinker with medicine? You're not sure, you know? Your kid needs antibiotics. I'm not sure. Would you do that? Would you? Would you do that? Why? Because you don't want your kid to... Right? Guess what? If you take the wrong drug, there could be an actual consequence, yeah? If someone takes the wrong drug, if someone overdoses, they, you know, on whatever it is, someone takes the wrong drug, they could die. That, right? There's a consequence. So I remember my 12th grade teacher, who also was my college teacher, introducing that concept to us. She said, right, they're physical laws of reality, right, like that, or like something called gravity, right? You drop something, it will drop, right? So they're spiritual laws of reality. And you don't see them with your physical eyes because you can't see spirituality with your physical eyes, right? But they're for real. They're for real. And they make a difference. And Hashem stresses us that they make a difference by saying, and the punishment for not keeping Hilchos Nida is kares. Right? Does Hashem want us to have kares? No. Do we want to punish our children or give consequences to our children? No. So why do I tell my five-year-olds, if you keep running in the street, I'm going to send you inside? Do I want her inside or outside? If you know me at all, I want her outside. Okay? But punish consequences are to deter us from doing the wrong thing. Right? So Hashem scares us, right? So that we don't do that. Okay, so we said, super important to win any question, ask a Rav. Why? Because we said they are the experts. And if you would ask on a medical thing that involves your body that will live max 120 years, you should definitely ask a expert on matters that involve your soul that is going to determine your eternity. Correct? Yeah? Okay. And this is going to bring us into another very important point, is somebody, we said, to overcome embarrassment and awkwardness. The other thing that sometimes is could be misconstrued is when it comes to the tznius aspect of all of this. Okay? Well, there's the tznius of the relationship between husband and wife, which is supposed to be very exclusive and very private. Very, very important in a world that has no respect for privacy, and everybody should know every time you brush your teeth, right? Right? That it's totally that whole concept of posting and people seeing people know is over here, and we are over here. Okay? That is our outstanding quality. That's what Bilam HaRasha, when he's saying the praises, Hashem's words through his mouth to the Jewish people, he said, you are outstanding in your tznius, right? So yes, the relationship of husband and wife should be exclusive, should be private, right? And there should only be a male and female relationship there, not to spread that out anywhere else, chas v'shalom, right? And also another area of tznius that comes up is going to the mikvah. We all know, okay, because that we do, that is an area, something that's supposed to be kept private. We're told it's supposed to be, you're not supposed to announce it to anybody, right? Okay. But it has to be understood how the tznius plays out. So I bump into you at the mikvah. Should I be embarrassed? Oh my gosh, I saw someone at the mikvah. No! Someone asked me, Akala, what should I do if I meet people I know at the mikvah? Ta, shmooze. Shmooze, right? Right? So you have to know, we said, who determines what's right and what's wrong? The creator of this game of life, who is? Hashem, right? Very good mashal to help you remember. Who makes the rules of Monopoly? Whoever created Monopoly. If you come along and say, no, that's not how you play Monopoly, it'll be no, it's copyrighted by the creator of the game. So the creator of this game, of this universe, is Hashem, and he decides what's right and what's wrong with everything, with mitzvos, averos, values, one of them being tznius. So what is... Where should we be tznius and where should we not be tznius? Where is it misconstrued? If you would under, it's very concrete, very simple. Is misplaced mercy mercy? Or does misplaced mercy become cruel? Yeah? Can you think of an example? Okay. Oh my gosh, it would be so mean to lock up those bad guys, those terrorists. That would be so mean to them. So let the terrorists run free and do suicide bombs. Yeah? Is that misplaced mercy turns into something wrong? So misplaced, incorrect tznius is not better. It's messed up. It's wrong. Okay? So we should never think are you too tzanua to go deliver your baby? No! No! Is it comfortable? No! We try not to think about it, you know? But you wouldn't not go to a hospital and say, I gotta do it myself because I'm a too tzanua. No, that's wrong. That's pikuach nefesh. That's an aveira, you know? So where does sneeze not play out? So you're not supposed to announce it to people that you're going. But if you don't go because you think, it'll infringe on sneeze, that's messed up. That's wrong. Do you understand? I can't go because people are going to know about it. Wrong. You don't announce it. You don't tell people unnecessarily. But sometimes you have to ask people. Someone's over at your house or visiting the neighborhood. Like, where's the mikvah? When are they open? Like, there's a time and place to talk about it. Right? When shmooze with our friends. Oh, when's your mikvah night? Like, wrong. Right? Right? But, so you try to keep it as quiet as possible. Be discreet about it. But never, ever let it get in the way of going. Does that make sense? And once you go and I go and we meet there, awesome, we're both doing the right thing. We're doing the holiest thing that a person could do. We're doing the same thing that Sari Menu did. Miriam, right? We're passing on this tremendous, powerful, holy tradition, right? Which the whole Kedusha of Am Yisrael is dependent on, okay? So it's not sneeze not to show shilas, it's wrong. It's not sneeze not to go to the mikvah because you're embarrassed, it's wrong. So, yeah, you know, now, Baruch Hashem, I have kids who are teenagers and girls are a little more in tune, you know, than past the week, you know. You don't say, I have to go, you know, I was speaking to my husband today, like, are you allowed to lie? I was wondering, are you allowed to lie for the sake of tznias, of not going? I said, well, what would you say that would be a lie? I said, I don't know, like, if I say, like, I have a meeting, I have to go meet someone, talk to someone. You know, it's not a straight-out lie, but we don't even say things that are not straight-out lies. I don't know. You could ask a shayla to know for certain, but it seems reasonable. But definitely, I'm not a posek. I don't say anything. You know, sakalacha. But so you try to keep it quiet. But if people have to know, so then they have to know. It's nothing to be embarrassed of. It's not a reason not to go at all. So hard is not an out. Hard is good. Awkward is like, okay, you know, that's just like a word that kids use way too much, but it's not an excuse to do something. It's awkward, so it's harder, so it's more of a challenge. Challenges are opportunities to grow. okay, so those were just important points to think about. Any questions? Did you want to ask something, or did I clarify? Okay, fine. Okay, fantastic. What time is it? Oh no. Yeah. Oh no. They're coming from hour of 9:30?
Officially.
Okay, so here we go. Okay, so this is what we're doing all the time. And like I said, look at it. Hopefully at the end of this year, hopefully we're going to care about this more and be like, yes, this is an opportunity. Yes, I want to do it with all my heart, all my soul. This is what builds me. Right? I have so little time in this world. I want to make the most of it. Bring on those challenges. Right? Do the mitzvos exactly with all the details and the kavanos and the feelings. Right? So you're all going to go home and take out, and if you don't have one, go on Amazon. You don't even have to leave your house. And get an English sefer if you want, and review the halachas. But a little bit we'll do together. So we all know, how does one become in the state of nidus? Has one become a nida from blood coming out, exiting from the uterus? Okay? And how do we know where it exited from? You know, so let's say it's, the most typical common reason we have that is when we get our period, right? So when a woman gets her period, or if she's spotting due to anything, pregnancy, birth control, the beginning of a period, after childbirth. So when there's blood that comes out of the uterus, then we become anida, and then Hashem says, if you come close to anida, the punishment is kares. And from that, we learn that the Rabbanim are supposed to put harchakos safeguards. Okay, and now are we going to view the harchakos as nuisances? The more, the better. Because every time I keep a harchaka, I'm like, why am I doing this? Because it's a mitzvah. Right? And that's another area of not to get misconstrued with sneeze. Oh, I shouldn't keep, I'm embarrassed, you know, in public to hand, you know, the keys to my husband like this. I'm embarrassed. So, like, I'm going to give it to him. I'm going to be over on the halacha, the harchaka. Yeah? Right or wrong? What am I embarrassed of? That people think that know that we're not Mitzer? Maybe it's more embarrassing for people to know that we are Mitzer. Like, right? Either one, so they know we're keeping Taras and Shpachel. Good. I sure hope you are, right? Right? So that's definitely not, you know, oh, it's embarrassing, I'm not going to do it. And the more, the better. They're to protect us. And, like we said, with this perspective, it's more opportunities for us to increase our awareness of Hashem's presence and build our relationship with Him. So one becomes an Ida, and then one counts 5 days. Now, remember, when we start becoming an Ida, it doesn't matter what point of the day it is, even if it's at the end of the day close to Shkia, that still counts as day one. It doesn't have to be a full day, okay? So we count 5 days, we mark our calendar of when we got it, was it during the day, during the night, so we could calculate the next month, right? The fast times. And then after, at the end of the fifth day, we could do the super important Hefsek Tahara. And before doing the Hefsek Tahara, a woman is supposed to clean out. The Hefsek Tahara is the steps of the Tahara process. Every one of them has to be there in order. Nothing can be skipped. You have to have the 5 days, and you have to have the Hefsek Tahara, and we're knowing to do the Moch after the Hefsek Tahara. We must have Zayin Nekiyim with minimally a Bedikah on the first day and the last day. What are we supposed to do? Twice a day, once in the morning, once in the evening. But the first and the last are the most critical. And again, it'll say in all the Sfarim, if a woman has any questions, she missed, she was a little bit late, she has a hard time doing Bedikahs, ask, right? If a person has a hard time doing Bedikahs, the Rav might say, do it on day one and do it on day seven, right? Ask, ask, ask. And then, obviously, when we do a Hefsek Tahara, we have to do it on a clean white cloth. We have to check it first that it has no spots. Our hands have to be clean so we don't get anything on it. Because anything on a Bedikah cloth counts, right? Different than a kesem, a stain. A stain is another way to become an Ida. I'm not sure that we mentioned that. But let's just review really quickly. What does a stain mean? It means that it's bigger than the size of a grist, a penny, right? And it's can only be attributed that it didn't come from anywhere else, right? Other than from the uterus. And it has to be a problematic color, like the color of blood, red. Colors that could be blood, questionable colors, are brown, dark pink, deep yellow, okay? And again, this will blow your minds. But this is the reality that Rabbanim, who are trained to paskin on shilas, are trained with the exact color. You would be very surprised. You might think, oh my gosh, this was so definitely not going to make it, you know? But it's worth asking. So you have anything that's not absolutely red blood, if it's brown, if it's pink, if it's anything, then definitely, definitely, definitely ask. Okay, that's what Hashem wants us to do. So we have our Hefsek Tahara done before Shkia. Very, very important reminder, okay? What if we forget to do our Hefsek Tahara? Could we start the Zayin Nekiyim? No, remember we said, you have to have every step in order. The 5 preliminary days, the 7 clean days, the Zayin Nekiyim, right? The Chafifa, the cleaning, the preparing, taking all chatzitzas off, and then the Tefillah, and then, don't forget, the little end point is, before you touch your husband, you have to tell him that you were Tova. Okay? I was just at a review class, and the Rebbetzin mentioned that, and someone said, oh, I was married 13 years, I never knew that. So that's a very important last point, is that you have to let your husband know that you were Tova, that you are in a different status now. You are Mutzer to him. Okay? So really, really problematic to forget the Hefsek, because then you lose an entire day. So it's a very advisable idea, a very good idea, to do an insurance Hefsek. You heard of this? Yeah. Yeah? To do one in the morning of the fifth day. To do one in the morning and put it aside. It's also a very good idea to label, because otherwise it's like, I think this was that, and you need to know which one Shiloh was which. So do an insurance one in the morning, and then set an alarm on your phone. We do it for everything else, right? To do it closer to Shkia. Again, Hefsek is different than Bedikos, morning, evening, morning, evening, morning, evening, because you could try and try and try again. but we're warned not to try too many times because we don't want to cause any irritation, scratch ourselves, and cause any bleeding. But they could be tried, and it could be cleaned out. You could douche before if doing a half steak. Okay, so there's 5 days, and the end of the fifth day, the morning of the fifth day, we'll do insurance. The end of the fifth day, we'll do the half steak. The moch is put in. That's the only thing. The Rebbe before says that you could use the tampon if it's hard to use a batik cloth for the moch. Again, also, there different people hold different ways. So always go by your Rav. But the moch stays in from Shkia to after Tzeis. And after we do a hefsek, a moch, bedikas, very important to examine it. The best light is natural light, or these fluorescent lights are pretty bright too. If it's good, we're supposed to throw it out. If it's questionable, save it and write on it when, or on the envelope, however you like to do it, what it is. Because when you ask the Rav, he needs to know if it's a hefsek, if it's a moch, what day it is. Because it makes a difference what day it is. The later it is, the more lenient it is, because the less likely it is that it's blood from the uterus. Okay, so we are supposed to be aware every day that it's the Zayin Nekiyim, and remember, we're going to be like, oh, we're doing such a holy thing. This is such a good opportunity. Wow, fantastic, right? And then at the end, after the seventh day, we know we prepare for the tefillah. Sometimes people, you know, have a hard time. They're like, I know it's supposed to feel so spiritual, but I just am not feeling it, right? Well, if you don't have taste buds for sweetness, you're not going to taste sweetness. What am I saying? Is that, what does it mean, spiritual? Spiritual means connected to spirituality. What is that? That is Hashem, right? So if I'm not really thinking about Hashem most of my days, most of my life, I'm not going to go into the mikvah and feel Hashem. I'm not going to go to the kotel and feel Hashem, right? Because I haven't built that awareness of Hashem. And then if I am living with Hashem, constantly building my awareness of Hashem, and it's not so hard if we remember that mitzvos, why are we doing mitzvos? Because Hashem says so, and that makes us remember, they're just right here. So yeah, the more in touch we are with Hashem, yes, the more spiritual we'll feel. And spirituality does not come automatically, and it takes, so it depends on your thoughts, okay? So it is a good thing to think about. It is a good thing to think about that what a special thing that we are doing. And it's very powerful to think about that women have been doing this since the time of Sarimino. I don't know if before that, right? And, you know, if we think it's hard, okay, hard is good, but if you could also read some of those stories about people who are sacrificed so much to go in icy waters or to go during times of persecution, and you're like, oh, so my mikvah's a little ick, like, okay. Deal, right? Deal. So it doesn't feel so comfortable. Like, don't focus on that. Focus on Hashem. Focus on something else, you know? Think about how you're going to be a more giving, loving wife, right? Okay, and then the chafifa itself, the preparation for the mikveh itself, remember the goal of that is to remove anything on our body that's not our body so that all of our body is touched, comes into contact with the holy waters in the mikveh at the same time, right? So we take out all knots. We use hot or warm water on our hair, especially, because cold water tangles. And we take out all knots. We comb it through to make sure that every bit of our hair is exposed to the water at the same time. Remember also that when you go under, hair goes up, you know, so sometimes, like, it's helpful to go like this, you know, and then to let go of it. You can't be holding it. You can't be touching any part of the floor, the walls, because then whatever is touching that is not touching the water. Right? Right? So that's the goal, is to take off anything that doesn't belong there. Some makeup is very hard to take off because it's meant to last through tears and sweat and everything. So you might want to consider, instead of like working, you know, your mascara and your eyeliner, you know, with... and then coming home with red puffy eyes, like, you know, you might want to not wear that type of makeup that day. We're supposed to, you know, or deal with, I spent a few years in kindergarten, but I wasn't really so familiar with that materials, and I got dye all over my hands. I was like, oh my goodness, it's a good thing I don't have to go to the mikveh tonight, right? I probably said that to like very close down, very quietly, you know, but to be careful leading up to it, knowing that everything's going to have to be removed. Nail polish, lenses, right? We can't forget lenses, brushing teeth. Our eyes shouldn't be too tight. Our mouth shouldn't be too tight. It should be just right, right? And then people have different minhagim of how many times they are tovel. If when you come out of the mikvah, then the woman, and it's a requirement that a person is, there's a shomeret that sees that all of you is under the water at the same time. But we just have any time. Yeah? Because there's so much, I mean, there's so many elchas, and I already told you to go study on your own, so we could just stop any time, right? So that's a requirement. I'm so embarrassed, I can't do it. Is that sneeze or is that misplaced? That's misplaced. Right? And again, you know, so don't ignore your feelings and don't, you know, deny your feelings if you're thinking, feeling that way. So maybe think about something else, because I'll tell you a trick. You can't think about two things at the same time. So change what you're thinking about and then you won't be thinking about her. Right? You go, and I'm thinking about this. Right? Okay? And then when we come out and we have to remember to say that we were tovel. And of course, there are tons of details and different situations that could come up, and what we're going to do with that is ask a rough. Should we stop right here right now?
We have a few more minutes.
Okay, so I read a beautiful story today that it got me like to tears, so I thought I would share it, and we'll end with that, okay? Because I don't think we need to wrap up in time, because I think I said the main points enough times. So, a woman from Montreal tells the following stories. She says that this story is a chain of events that led to an ending filled with revealed goodness and blessing. This is what a woman said. I believe that a mitzvah should always be done with joy and happiness. In agreement? I do my best to observe every mitzvah in this way, and mikvah especially so. Immersing in the mikvah, I don't know if I said that time, on time has always been very important to me. I have made it a priority to do everything within my power to keep to this resolution. I was 3 months pregnant, sometime after I gave birth to my sixth child, when I fell down a flight of stairs and miscarried. Understandably, I was quite distraught and yearned to conceive again. However, a year went by and I still did not conceive. I continued to be very careful to immerse in the mikvah on time. About a year after the miscarriage, I had to go to the mikvah on a Friday night. Okay, we know that's often more challenging, but we're going to have a different perspective on it. Okay. The mikvah was located about an hour walk from my house, and the temperature at the time was quite freezing. -4 degrees Fahrenheit. Okay? Like, I felt bad for myself this week that I was cold. Like, no. It was in the middle of winter, and it gets very cold in Montreal. I did not want to drive there before Shabbos since I had small children to care for, and I wanted to light my Shabbos candles on time, meaning I had an hour-long walk both ways. My husband advised me not to go. He said it was dangerous to walk that far in such cold weather. However, I was adamant. I wanted to immerse on time. No delays in this wonderful mitzvah. I'm not saying that what she did was right. I'm not, like, it could be that it wasn't right, but that's not, it's still inspiring. You'll see. The walk was long and icy. I dressed warmly, but nevertheless, I got frostbite on my knees as the cold was so intense, it pierced through my clothing. I got blisters on my feet, in my boots, but I was very determined to do this mitzvah on time. Hashem was with me, and with great thanks to Hashem, I did conceive that night. When I was about 2.5 months into the pregnancy, as I was coming out of the shower, I felt a sharp, sudden pain deep in my abdomen and an unexpected flow of liquid. Panicked, I called the doctor, who said, "You have lost your waters and most likely lost the baby. Today is Thursday. Come see me on Monday and we'll do the DNC. After a difficult weekend, I met the doctor at the hospital. He decided, let me do an ultrasound before the DNC and see exactly what's going on. On the table, the technician said, "There's a heartbeat." The doctor looked, and miraculously, there was a baby floating in a thimble full of amniotic fluid. The doctor assured me that it all looked okay. He told me, "Go home, don't worry. The amniotic fluid would replenish itself and all would be fine." My seventh child, my beautiful daughter, was born on Matzah Yom Kippur in a peaceful, uneventful birth, Baruch Hashem. But the story does not end there. When this same daughter was 8 years old, my elder daughter, who was my fifth child, was 15 years old, was diagnosed with a very rare form of leukemia. The doctor said that without a bone marrow transplant, she would not survive. We immediately had all my children, the closest relatives, tested. The only child who was a perfect match was my youngest, this wonderful daughter, born from that challenging mikvah immersion. So, Hozu Hashem Kitov. Okay, well, Hashem should give us a lot of Siyata Dishmaya to try to keep our perspective clear, positive, optimistic, to view it as an opportunity to do it b'simcha with all our hearts and all our souls, and we should just be blessed by Hashem with so much bracha that then in turn we use to serve Him. Thank you so much, ladies. And I apologize if it was too long. Thank you.